This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave.
Darling, you send me. I know you send me. Darling, you send me. Honest, you do. Honest, you do. Honest, you do.
You Send Me is the name of Daniel Wolfe's biography of the late Sam Cooke, written in cooperation with Cooke's close associate, S.R. Crane. It investigates the circumstances behind Cooke's mysterious death over 30 years ago. At the age of 33, Cooke was shot through the heart in a seedy motel room. Sam Cooke is best remembered for his soul hits You Send Me, Only 16, Chain Gang, Cupid, Twistin' the Night Away, and Shake. He started his career in a teenage gospel group. When he was 19, he was picked by S.R. Crane to replace the retiring lead singer of the Soul Stirrers, the legendary R.H. Harris. Terry Gross spoke with Daniel Wolfe and S.R. Crane last spring. Their book is now out in paperback. This is The Soul Stirrers, with Sam Cooke singing lead.
Lord, up there, I'll meet my mother. Lord, up there, I'll meet my mother. Saint and joy, bed, rain and glory. Lord, I fall from my from Canaan. Lord, when I get on home, my Savior, I join. Well, I shout, God knows I'm gonna dwell. Shout, hey, Lord, God knows I'm gonna know I fall from my.
What was it like to have Sam Cooke in the Soul Stirrers? Since he was younger than the other members of the band, did he behave differently? And
Yep.
Yeah, what was the difference?
He behaved a lot different. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, you could never get him up in the morning on time. And he's always late. And I devised a plan to get him there on time. If the program was at 8 o'clock, I'd tell him it's 7. And so maybe we'll get him there on time. He had all of that. But whenever he got there, he ruled the roost, as we call it.
Mr. Crane, am I right that when he started singing with the Soul Stirrers, younger people in the audience, especially women people, started coming forward in the congregation the way they hadn't with Harris?
Oh, I'll tell you the truth. This is a wonderful thing. I noticed in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, I told my bass singer then, Jesse Farley, I said, Jay, did you see all these people? They didn't go to Archie Brownlee. That was one of the blind boys. They didn't go to Kyle O'Turner. That was the Pilgrim Trail. I said, they came to Sam. And Father said, yep, I noticed him. I said, yeah, well, this must be the man. And the young people the young people used to sit in the back. But when Sam started singing, the young people came to the front. And we pushed Sister Flute in the back. And that's the older people. So we call her Sister Flute. We don't call nobody's name. And the young people push Sister Flute in the back when Sam started singing. But now when R.H. Hass was singing, Sister Flute was in the front, and she pushed the young people in the back. And
so
that's kind of the difference.
Do you think this actually brought young people closer to God or just closer to Sam Cooke?
I don't know. I'm not going to try to answer that. I don't know.
It's certainly worth looking at the fact that over in the secular world, the teenagers was being, quote-unquote, invented around this time, so that for the Platters and the Dominoes and Elvis Presley, there was something similar going on.
Daniel Wolfe, why do you think Sam Cooke wanted to cross over from gospel music to pop?
Well, you should ask me that.
Okay, I'll ask you that, Mr. Crane.
Go ahead, Mr. Crane.
The reason Sam had wanted to cross over to pop, he'd gone as far as he could go in gospel. The gospel only paid that little 10 and 15 cents that we was getting in those days. and Sam wanted to better his condition.
So you think it was for money?
Well, it was partly for money, yes. He wanted some money. He wanted the nice things. He wanted fine cars that he see. And I wanted them too.
What about the music? Did he particularly want to sing pop music?
Yeah, he wanted to. He wanted to sing it. You didn't have to urge him, because he had sense, he had the knowledge, he had the speech, he had the training, and it just fit Sam Cooke.
Now, did he tell you that this is what he wanted and almost like ask for your permission or...
Yes, he asked for my opinion.
What'd you tell him?
I told him, no, stay in Soul Service. Because I couldn't see no further than Soul Service.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Oh, sure.
And of course, he could see further than me because he had better education than I had. As you can see now, my education is limited, very limited. But my knowledge, but my wisdom is very high. My wisdom is sky high.
Amen.
I ain't joking with you.
When Sam first thought about crossing over into rock and roll or pop, he tried to do it halfway. He cut a single as Dale Cook.
Yeah.
Thinking that might fool somebody. Of course, there he was yodeling and sounding just like the man everybody knew, and I don't think it fooled anybody.
And he didn't fool nobody.
Well, I'd like to play the song that made him famous as a pop singer.
You Send Me, maybe.
You Send Me, yeah. And in fact, what I'd like to do is play the demo of the song. I think he sounds great on this. It's just Sam Cooke and guitar. In fact, is that him playing guitar or is it somebody else?
No, that's Cliff White playing the guitar.
Okay.
A lot of folks thought it was Sam playing the guitar, but that was Cliff White. That's reading Cliff White is a part of us now. He played every song that Sam sang.
Cliff White, who's one of the collaborators on this book, You Send Me, talked about Sam coming in to sing it for him the first time, and he said, I sat there with my guitar, and Sam taught me the chords. I started playing it, and he sung You Send Me about 6 times, and I thought, well, that's not too interesting. And then he got to the second verse, and the second verse was nothing but saying You Send Me over and over again, another
that's
six
right.
times. And Cliff said, this song isn't going anywhere. This one's a total failure. He ended up eating his words.
That's right.
Why don't we hear the demo of You Send Me? And this is actually featured now on a new box set CD called The Sar Story, and it's the recordings that Sam Cooke released on his own record label, a record label we'll talk about in a bit.
Okay.
This is You Send Me.
You send me when I see you. You send me whenever I hold you, you send me, honest you do. At first I thought it was infatuation, but ooh, it's lasted so long. And now I find myself wanting to marry you and take you home, because when I'm with you, you...
Daniel Wolfe, who was this demo made for?
This was made for Art Roop and the owner of Specialty Records, where he had sung gospel, and for Bumps Blackwell, who was the producer of the record. What ended up happening was he came into the studio to cut this record on a day that Art Roop was supposed to be elsewhere. And Bumps Blackwell had brought in some white backup singers. Bumps and Sam were determined not only to get out of gospel, but to leap right over R&B and end up in the pop market, which is to say the market that appealed to both whites and blacks, and therefore a much larger audience. Art Roop didn't particularly believe in that kind of music. He had major hits with Little Richard, which was a much harder sound. And when he saw the white backup singers and heard the sort of lilting sound of You Send Me, he went off. And he as much as threw Bumps and Sam out of the studio.
That's right.
They picked up the demo and headed across town and eventually signed with a tiny little label called Keen, which is the label that had the hit. And as Art Roop said later, I've been in mourning ever since. I've been wearing black ever since.
That's right.
Well, Daniel, as you point out, this was a time when it was very difficult for most black artists to cross over into the, you know, white parts of radio and record sales. Did Sam Cooke have any trouble doing that?
Well, he didn't have trouble with You Send Me, in other words, in terms of rock and roll, which was still considered a sort of mongrel music. He then, though, tried to play the Copacabana. He wanted to get into the nightclub scene as well, because there you could sell albums, and you made a lot more money on them than you did on 45s. But the first time he played the Copa, where he sang songs like Putting on My Top Hat and that sort of thing, he was a total bomb. The orchestra was going one direction. He was going another direction. The audience couldn't have cared less. And it took him a long time to get over that and to come back, and he finally did and triumphed at the Copa, but it was 6 years, 5 years later.
Mr. Cream, what was it like for you at the Copa? What did you think of the world of nightclubs?
Well, actually, by the time we got to the Copa, we had sang at Town Hill, and we had sang at the Elegante, and we'd made it, and so we begged Larry Auerbach at the agency to come out and hear us, because we knew we could get back in the Copa. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, I kind of differed with Daniel when you say he was a bum. Sam was just singing, and he did all right. But what the reason what that Sam didn't take it to Copa, it was they had a storyteller by the name of Myron Coyne.
Oh, the Borscht Belt comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And the people that came to see Myron Coyne was old people. And, of course, Sam Cooke sang his heart out then. I knew he was singing. He knew he was singing then. He knew he was good enough. But the people that come to hear Myron Coyne was 50s and 60s, and Sam's a kid coming on there singing, Lord, You Send Me, and all that kind of mess.
Oh, sure.
And that's
well,
what
it
signed to them.
Myron Coyne was the kind of comic whose punchlines were mostly in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was.
He attracted an audience of older people who knew
right.
Yiddish and who would not know who Sam Cooke was or
never
probably
heard
care
of Sam
very much.
Cooke.
That's interesting.
Terry's guests are Daniel Wolfe and S.R. Crane. Their biography of Sam Cooke, You Send Me, is out in paperback. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Terry's interview with Daniel Wolfe and S.R. Crane. Their biography of Sam Cooke is called You Send Me.
Daniel, here's a question for you.
Okay.
When Sam Cooke started singing pop, do you feel you hear a lot of gospel influence in his voice? And I'm wondering if you could maybe choose one of his pop records that you think has a particular connection to one of his gospel records.
Well, I think part of the development of Sam Cooke was there was always the gospel in his voice, but the longer he did rock and roll, and the more confident he became, the more he let that out. By the time you get to a song like Bring It On Home to Me, later in his career, he was being much more upfront, I think, about his gospel roots. And he was singing on that particular song with the young Lou Rawls, singing those yeahs back and forth.
Yes.
And that's call and response. I mean, that's getting Sister Flute. It's almost indistinguishable from gospel music. At the beginning...
That's right.
At the beginning, tunes like Wonderful World or I'll Come Running Back to You are much, he's being much more careful about sounding not white, but sounding not heavy black gospel, because he was trying to get the market.
That's well, right. Why don't we hear Bring It On Home to Me?
Great.
If you ever change your mind about leaving, leaving me behind. Oh, bring it to me. Bring your sweet loving. Bring it on home to me. Yeah,
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 yeah.
I know I laughed when you left.
bring it all home to me.
Ahead, well, or go backwards, depending on where we are in the story. Let's go to 1959, when Sam Cooke and you, Mr. Crane, and a third partner founded SAR Records, and the R was for your middle name.
That's right. Mr. Crane. Senior Roy is my name.
Yeah, and the S was
the
for
R
Sam.
R is Roy. So, S for Sam, Alex, and Roy.
Daniel Wolfe, you describe SAR Records as Sam Cooke's idea of the civil rights movement put into practice. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, one of the quotes in the book is from a friend of Sam's called Harold Batiste, who said, if this is our music, why don't we own it?
It
strikes me as still an important question.
It really is.
And SAR music was Sam saying, I don't always want to sing for someone else and just get a percentage of it. I want to own this business. He already owned the publishing for his songs, which was semi-revolutionary for the time. A lot of artists didn't, and a lot of artists regret it to this day because they don't have the money.
That's right.
But Sam owned his publishing, and SAR was a kind of extension of that. It was both, he hoped, a way when he couldn't sing anymore, or wasn't a teen idol, to stay in the music business. And while he was still singing, it was a way to try out ideas. So he would go there, and for example, the Sims twins were a duet who were the sort of model for Sam and Dave, and he brought them in to help sing back up on Cupid. And while they were in there, he said, "I have this song called Soothe Me. Would you try recording that?" They did. It was a big hit, and Sam could see that he could stay on the other side of the recording studio and turn the dials, and have some say in the product as well.
Yes.
Had Sam Cooke been having problems with his labels, besides the fact that he didn't own the publishing, was he asked to do things that he didn't really want to do? Did he want more control over his material or the presentation?
Well, I tell you, this is that's a question that's hard to answer. But he didn't have any trouble. It's just some things he would do and some things he wouldn't.
Mr. Crane,
he don't care who he was.
Crane is being nice now. He's being very nice. In my opinion, he did have some trouble. I mean,
I'm a nice fellow.
You are a nice fellow. I'm nice sometimes. He went from Specialty Records, where he had this fight over You Send Me with Art Rube, to Keen Records, which was this tiny label. And at Keen, Sam frankly didn't think he was getting the money that he should have been getting, as I understand it.
You're right.
He then went to RCA, and one of the troubles he had with RCA was they had the only other African-American artist on the label at the time, I believe, was Harry Belafonte.
Right.
And they had a real clear idea of what a black singer ought to be singing, and it wasn't Sam Cooke music.
That's right.
So the first song, for example, he released was Teenage Sonata, which, if you haven't heard of it, it's for a good reason. It is a terrible song and a terrible record. He had cut already Chain Gang, which they delayed 6 months releasing, I think because they felt it was too soulful, believe it or not, for RCA's image. When they did release it, it was a massive hit.
That's right.
So he wanted more control.
Yep.
Daniel Wolfe is the author of You Send Me, The Life and Times of Sam Cooke, written in cooperation with S.R. Crane. It won the Ralph J. Gleason Music Book Award this year. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Sam Cooke biographer Daniel Wolfe and S.R. Crane.
Sam Cooke was killed at the age of 33 in 1964. He was shot through the heart and bludgeoned on the head, I believe, found in just an overcoat and one shoe in a sleazy motel. What was the official story of what happened?
The official story was that he had abducted a woman in order to rape her. She had escaped, and in searching for her, he'd broken down the door and been shot by the motel manager.
And what do you think of that as just the official story? Do you think that there's a true story that is different?
Yes.
Why?
Well, if you look for one thing, simply at the testimony at the inquest, which was a very hurried affair, it's rife with contradictions. No one seems to be able to quite get their story straight about this. As it turns out, the woman he took to the motel was arrested for prostitution a month later. Certainly a bunch of Sam Cooke's friends, as is first revealed in this book, say he knew the motel, Sam, and that he probably knew the woman. There are a lot of holes in the story that don't hold up. Among other things, I should add, there are a couple of people's testimony in here who saw him with quite a lot of money at the beginning of the evening, which he did not have by the end of the evening, and which provides a different motive and certainly a different spin on this story, I think.
So do you think the possibility is that he was robbed and murdered, or do you think there's something even more mysterious that happened?
I think he was robbed. That's my guess, and I think his clothes were taken when he was robbed, and I think in pursuing that, he ended up at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mr. Crane, what do you think?
Well, I really can't. One thing I knew Sam. And by saying that Sam wanted to rape anybody, that's the biggest lie that could ever been told. And he wouldn't rape nobody because I had to hire people to keep women off of him. He wouldn't rape nobody. And that's the big lie. And, of course, I didn't have enough money to track it down. If I'd have had it, I would have. But I just didn't have enough money. And then I knew better than to try to track up a lie. If you go to track a lie down, you lose everything you got. You lose all your money. You lose all your power. You lose all everything. So I just sat back because I know the man upstairs is going to straighten this thing. And you got to let him have it. That's my version of it.
Can I put something in here, Terry?
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the sad things in terms of Sam's career about when he died was he had just recorded and released a song called The Change Is Gonna Come.
And that's
if,
right.
And if there was ever a moment when gospel music met pop music in a beautiful meeting, it is that song, which I think is as intelligent and moving a discussion of the civil rights movement and the history of African Americans in this country as we have in music. It's a great, great song.
Well, I think it's a beautiful note to end on. I thank you both enormously for talking with us. Thank you,
glad
Daniel Wolfe.
To you.
Thank you, S.R. Crane.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You Send Me, The Life and Times of Sam Cooke, won the Ralph J. Gleason Music Book Award this year. It's out in paperback.